Hello, everyone. This is JVL here with my best friends, Sarah Longwell and Tim Miller of The Bulwark. Guys, lots happening. We got a long show today.
Kate Middleton, full hour on the Kate Middleton saga.
Basically.
No. You guys, I have been I need to have George Conway explain it all to me about Kate Middleton. And I feel like because he has corgis, he would like know stuff about the royals. But I am a royal... Okay. Not watcher. Like, I do not care about the royals. I want to wait for whatever episode or season of The Crown comes out, and I will watch the dramatized version. However, I will say it is so dominating both my social feeds and just
something
the news.
Has happened to Kate Middleton's face, and people don't know what it is. And instead of putting out a Mother's Day photo, because they have a different Mother's Day in the United Kingdom than in America, so you didn't miss Mother's Day. Don't worry about that. And instead of putting out a Mother's Day photo, she put out a photoshopped photo of what may very well be her face from a magazine cover with on her children, and they had to retract it. A lot of drama. I'll give you the rest of it off air.
Did she go to Smile, Texas, and something went wrong?
Went to Smile, Texas. We'll get back to it.
We're going to get there.
Is that really all you're going to tell me? I thought you were going to genuinely tell me something about Kate Middleton.
That's all we know.
We're going to turn this show off.
It's a mystery. That's why so many people are talking about it. If we knew what had happened, then it wouldn't be such a big deal. But people don't know what has happened. She underwent surgery, but we don't know what. We don't know.
Sure.
Was it facial reconstruction? Has she been to Smile, Texas? Did she get some cheek implants? We don't know. But we'll all find out. We'll keep you posted.
Well, I'm glad you're speculating wildly. That seems good.
You know who didn't speculate?
This is a commentary show.
Robert Hur, who testified today before the
just
Republican
the facts,
House.
Ma'am, with Robert Hur.
Just the facts,
playing it straight.
And he was there, and he was there to make everybody angry. The Republicans were very angry because Mr. Deep State, try as he might, he wasn't equal to the task of draining the swamp. The Democrats were angry because, you know, like he did this thing where he pretended that Joe Biden couldn't remember his own name. And the most interesting thing, Tim, you watched the whole thing. I've only read transcripts. The most interesting thing is that in a moment with Pramila Jayapal, she said something like, the important thing is that you exonerated him. And Mr. Hur, who was an upright citizen, said, quote, I did not exonerate him. That word does not appear in the report. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Lawyer Man, for making it clear that in your report, which claims that you're not going to go forward with the prosecution because you don't have any proof that he's guilty, that that's not total exoneration. It's great that we still have standards in this Trump era. Tim, go.
Well, the good news, I think, for Biden and for Democrats is that he made no news today. I mean, you're trying to make that the news, I guess, that he didn't exonerate, but it was pretty minor. I think the big concern I had, right, was that, you know, he would expand on his observations, right? And there'd be a new round of stories about senile Biden. No, he had to retract, frankly, some of his observations about Biden, including most notably the one about him not knowing the date of his son's death, which is a very, very jarbled exchange where Biden actually volunteers the exact date of his own son's death. And then there's like a little bit of crosstalk over whether it's 2015 or 2017. And that did not appear in the report. Hur's report just said that he was off by a number of years on his son's death date. So it didn't seem like he was playing it quite straight on that. Nor was what Biden said quite straight about that, by the way, in the press conference, but it's neither here nor there. Anyway, Hur has to retract, or at least retract is maybe not a word, downshift, downgrade.
Clarify.
Yeah, some of the senility comments a little bit.
How does he downgrade them? What is the downgrading mechanism?
Well, I mean, I guess there is no, any time that anyone on the Republican side tried to get him to use a word other than the very specific three words that he used, which was a well-intentioned elderly man with a bad memory. Was it bad memory? Whatever it is, with a faulty memory. He would not go any further. And then we had the congresswoman from Pennsylvania, whose name's escaping my mind, like has to correct him specifically on the matter of Beau Biden's death and enter, and he's incorrect, and she has to enter into the record what actually happened. And he you know, says.
Because people went to the transcripts, yeah, right? Like, that's the thing that I saw, is everybody was posting the transcripts.
Yeah, they released the transcripts this morning before the hearing. So anyway, his performance at the hearing was, I do have to say, I think maybe undermined slightly the Democrats' case that he was a partisan hack. It's possible that he was just a naive government person because he had no strong, I mean, he wasn't really great today. If he was a paid Trump acolyte, he could have come in a lot hotter today than he did. Okay. And the Republicans are mad at him because he didn't go in a lot hotter. So he was, you know, taking some eggs from both sides. And I will say though, the stars of the thing were, there were a handful of, there are some performative Democrats who just do okay, Eric Swalwell. But then there was some strong Democratic questioning, like Ted Lieu, our friend, who like really corners him on the question of the difference between Trump. Lieu gets away from the whole elderly debate and corners him on the question of the difference between him and Trump, and reads all the things that Trump did, having his lawyers lie to the FBI, try to delete camera footage, goes through list after list. Did Biden do this? No. Did Biden do that? No. I thought that was a very strong exchange that very succinctly, 1 minute, showed the difference between Trump and Biden. And I think Schiff also scores some points by like, kind of flabbergasted, like keep going back and forth. He's like, you really didn't think that this random, you know, that taking a random drive-by about Joe Biden's memory was going to turn into a political football? Because her keeps being like, there was nothing political about this. And Schiff is basically like, are you an idiot? Like, was this intentional? Are you an idiot? Like, those are the options here. And her wasn't really taking a side on that. So, I mean, all in all, I think this is a win for Democrats mainly because I don't think anything today happened that is ad-worthy or memorable.
Yeah. Sarah, I mean, I'm sorry to do this to you again, but everything's coming up Biden, and the HER report is a big part of why the bar was set so low for Biden going into the State of the Union. Is it possible that Robert HER was a double agent and that the report was actually a way of...
Too much four-dimensional chess.
I don't think so.
Galaxy brain!
It's going too far.
I don't think so. Though one Republican did accuse him of being a Praetorian guard for the swamp.
Yes. Yes.
He said that the Republicans said that by not actually prosecuting Joe Biden, it just goes to show that he was throwing Republicans a bone with the line about his senility. And really, he's the Praetorian guard for the swamp and for Hunter Biden. He did mention Hunter Biden as well.
Yeah. I got bummer news for both you guys, which is the HER report, when it landed hard. People have heard about it.
Good and hard.
And they're not going to hear about this hearing. They never do. The cleanup. Maybe the Ted Lieu exchange, if everybody pushes it real hard, you can get at least the talkers out there saying, hey, you know, Joe Biden did know when his son died. But I mean, that's just, I'm sorry. This is not how voters work. Voters get the first shot when it cuts deep, and then the cleanup never lands.
Can I throw a counterpoint though? I don't disagree with that. I agree with you that to JVL's double agent thing is stupid. Sorry, JVL. I say that with love.
Serious.
Okay. Well, I mean, sometimes it's hard to tell. Every once in a while, you
make
serious
about that weird, the people, you know, trying to get out of being VP.
We're getting back to Katie Britt. Yeah. But again, exactly. We're going to get there in hour three of the show. So don't worry.
I will say this, though. I guess my point is more, I agree with you. The HER report hit hard. I also agree with JVL, it did lower expectations a little bit for the State of the Union, and maybe there was a little bit of a backhanded silver lining to it there. What my point was what happened today, I think that there were some concerns that like today would make it worse, right? Like you could imagine a world last week where the HER report comes out, Republicans are excited, Jim Jordan invites him to the Hill, and this is just a week of spiraling Joe Biden is a doddering old man news cycles. And the State of the Union kind of stopped that. And today was, in theory, an opportunity for Republicans to get back on that horse. And I just don't. I don't think it neighed or whatever would be the appropriate metaphor there.
I think that the where Biden's been racking up wins has been less this and more. They seem to have found their footing a little bit. Right. Like not just the State of the Union. And clearly, I do want to give them credit. I don't think the three of us have talked since the State of the Union, but obviously we've talked it to death already. But I want to like talk about the post game, you know, the new Biden ads where he's in his quarter zip, where he is, as JVL would say, hanging a lantern on his age and, you know, talking about how that brings wisdom. I swear to God, they're listening to us so hard. The surrogates have been out. I saw Warnock on the TV. I saw Buttigieg on the Sunday shows. And so I do think that they... Look, I don't know that it's worth me kind of being like, hey guys, the rhythms of politics are different now and I hate you playing catch up. But it's better late than never. Okay. We're here, we're where we are now, and it feels like they do at least know what they need to do to get the job done, and they're starting to do it. And I'm happy about that.
All right. Well, I'll throw one more crazy five-dimensional chess theory out at you. The media needs a story. And if Biden had been leading wire to wire, that's a relatively uninteresting story. But a Biden comeback is a story.
I mean, the media is desperate to tell that story. There just isn't any evidence of it yet.
We need some polls.
Hey, if the media, the big media, if you're looking for stuff to cover, I saw a former president of the United States standing on the stage at his glitzy, gross club. Mm-hmm. Paying homage to an autocrat, Viktor Orban. Mm. And what would be great is if the media could help people understand why praise for this particular autocrat who has robbed his country of democracy, why Trump's obsession with him, because Trump didn't just praise him and thank him from this stage and like, you know, slob all over him.
Boss.
He also talks about him in all of these speeches where he says he's a very strong man and he rules his country with an iron fist. This is psychotic and should be getting, if not wall-to-wall coverage, certainly as much coverage as Biden's age. I am beside myself about the things that Trump is saying on the trail that everybody is just being like, oh, yeah, that's just how he talks. This is nuts.
Look, AB and I did a whole show about this yesterday, and the extent to which this is not only a free pass for Trump, but just a gimme for him, because all the people on the right who want the Orbanism hear this and nobody else does. And I think even if you could make everybody else in America hear it, they wouldn't care. It's just too like, what?
It's hard because here's the thing about it is Orban is probably, maybe Berlusconi. Orban or Berlusconi are probably the most apt comparisons to Trump. Right. And kind of the meaty part of the bell curve of where he might go.
Because they're a little buffoonish as well as being autocrats.
Yeah. And it's not. See, I think Lukashenko's a little aggressive, especially. I don't know. Right? It's not like he isn't jailing people. Right. It's not like we have concentration camps.
Turning
yet.
That up to 11.
Yeah. He's like, what about Lukashenko? It could be Lukashenko. He's really bad. I think that's on the outer edges. Right? I guess my point is, like, if you were putting a nice spin on like the potential for a Trump next term, right? And that maybe it's not the end of democracy, like we have no more elections anymore, but maybe it's just a gradual erosion of democracy. Orban is a really good model for that, right? Yeah. Like Orban ran first as a pretty, like even more normal than Trump, frankly. Like as, you know, Orban's whole first term was basically like the Paul Ryan era of Trump, where like he did tax cuts. And, you know, then over time, it's become gradually more erosion, cracking down on minorities, on immigrants, LGBT, more cracking down on the media and on private corporations. Right. And like that is, I think, a very realistic model for where the Republicans want to take things and where Trump wants to take things. And so I think that where I'm getting at is that's a very important story to tell. Right. Because it's not like the media loves the story of, oh, there was a report today that Trump said Hitler did some good things in private. And it's like, yeah, that's not a good quote. A, it's a blind quote. We don't have it on audio, you know, and it's like,
I think
did
it was
really?
Kelly said it.
It's in the book. So, it's going back around. And it's like, okay, well, that's not great. All right. You know, but it's also like, you know, the Orban thing is on video and it is a direct analog to what Trump wants to do that is very scary and bad. And like Trump's educating people about that and focusing people on that should be what the job is of the media. It's what we're trying to do here.
Because let me tell you something. So this is people do not know who Viktor Orban is. So when you compare, you say, look, this is insane that Trump is praising Viktor Orban. A lot of Americans are like, why? Who is that? What country does that person president of? And that is the media's job. The media's job is to contextualize the things that Donald Trump is saying. He tried a coup here and like is trying to be president again. I don't like to do the like the media is the problem thing. And I do think it's a tough for them to walk the line because everybody was like, you're giving Trump too much attention. You're spreading his misinformation. And now they've dialed it back. And I'm just like, no, you guys have got to cover him. You've got to put his speeches on TV. The American people have to understand what this guy is talking about. Like, dictator for a day sounds like queen for a day. Like, nobody's scared of that. That sounds silly. But like,
sounds amazing.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, they're like, maybe he'll do the purge and like kill all my enemies on that one day. Like, whatever. But
so I will say the dictator for a day thing got a little more ominous in the most recent bleat. I don't know if you saw this. So Trump has been doing this dictator for a day gag where he said, I'm just going to drill, baby, drill. And what's the other thing that he's going to do?
Shut the border down. Shut the border.
Very American.
And then free the J6 political.
There
prisoners.
We go. He added that this week. Right. He added that this week. We're going to free the January 6th hostages. Now we're starting to get, now we're getting really dictatorish, right? Like it's, so for the people who are like, oh, it's just a gag, right? He's just saying he's going to do drilling executive orders on day one. And you can see this, this article in National Review. It's like, no, it's not really a gag. Once you go to freeing, people that are of your political persuasion because they attacked the Capitol.
Well, he called into CNBC the other day. And like one of the, I forget the guy's name who.
Aaron Ross Sorkin.
No, it wasn't the interviewer. He was on with somebody from some.
Squawk Box. He's on with Squawk Box with that guy. What's his face? Joe Kernan or whatever his name is.
Yeah, but there was a guy on, was one of the guests who is like a, but the guy, and the guy was sort of saying like, intimating that maybe he would work in the Trump administration. And I'm just watching the like, the Wall Street guys and the tech guys, and everybody's got kind of a, I don't want to use gross language like you, but everybody is demonstrating their excitement. They've got the, they are titillated by the idea of a Donald Trump comeback. They can just smell their regulatory rollbacks and their tax cuts. And they all are telling themselves the same story again about how, well, if they go in the administration, they can make sure he'll do it again. Mnuchin's like, yeah, I can go back in there. And meanwhile, the generals are all like, this guy said, you know, when it comes to Hitler, you got to hand it to him, which under no circumstances do you ever have to hand it to Hitler. I think that Joe Biden should have his comeback moment. But if somebody doesn't start talking about Donald Trump for real, like if we don't start having news cycles that help Americans understand Donald, I cannot tell you listening to these voters how much this stuff is. The legal stuff is like white noise. It all washes over them. It's making me crazy.
Sarah, we are 8 years into this project. Anybody, any grown ass adult who doesn't understand this stuff yet, there is nothing anybody can do to make them understand.
Not true.
Because they don't want to.
Wrong.
I don't understand how you can make people understand anything anymore. I mean, it's been right there. It's been there the whole time. It was never hidden. It was never secret. It's almost a decade we've been doing this.
Some people need to be hit on the head with a piano.
You know? Okay. Speaking of, Ken Buck
not
had
literally no labels. Okay. I do not want a DOJ report. Not literally, figurative speech, hit on the head with a piano.
That is just as bad. You know, you can have figurative RICOs. Okay. Ken Buck, who previously announced that, I've been trying this for 7 minutes. It previously announced that he was going to no longer run for Congress on Tuesday, did the, Sarah, you're going to like this. I'm out, right? You just I'm resigning. I can't do this anymore. Can you blame him?
I don't blame him. It's obviously terrible there. The question is, why is he resigning? Did he just reach his limit? Maybe. There was some speculation, which he quickly slapped down, speaking of no labels, that he would not run as the no labels candidate. Although I was slightly disappointed. Like, Ken Buck feels like about where no labels is going to land, like on some no-name congressman that is like ideologically not in sync and like a Democrat would never run with them and like it would never make sense. What's interesting about Ken Buck retiring right now is that it creates a weird situation for Lauren Boebert. So she right now is trying to get out of running in her Colorado District 3 because she will likely lose to Adam Frisch.
Our boy Adam Frisch.
Yeah, who's a great friend of the pod and is a nice centrist Dem who could absolutely beat her. So she wants to go run in Colorado 4, which is more friendly to her. That's Ken Buck's district. But he was going to leave, so now they have to have a special election. So what does she do? Does she resign her seat and then to go run in the special election? Or does she have to stay put? What do you think? Also,
let someone else win the special election and then beat them in a primary. It makes her primary tougher, I would think.
Makes her primary tougher.
Do they have to have a special election? Or can they leave it vacant?
They could leave it vacant. They also could hold the special election on the day of the primary. So people vote in both. That might be Lauren Boebert's out, right? Where people vote on one in the general election for some other Republican. But it would give that person a boost, you would think. And then on the other ballot, on a different ballot or on a different line on the ballot, I don't exactly know how it would work, they would then vote in their party preference primary for the November election. So that is that might be her possible escape. I don't know. I was hopeful that this was a big Ken Buck troll of Lauren Boebert, and it still might be. And Ken, you're always welcome on the pod to discuss this. But I listened to his interview with Dana Bash, and I don't know, man. The guy was complaining about how he's the third ranking member of the Judiciary Committee, and he got the 40th question at the hearing. And I think it might be possible in this situation that, like, this is just a Rodney Dangerfield situation. He's just like, he's not getting any respect, and he doesn't understand why everybody else is going along with the guy that did the coup. And he doesn't, and that's all anybody wants to ask him about. And he's just sick of it. And Mike Johnson's never called him, never asked him how he's doing, never rubbed his belly or anything. And he's just like, screw you, Mike Johnson. Good luck. Now you have you had 219, now you have 218. I think it's possible that it's just that. I don't, who knows? It's hard, far be it for me to get inside the brain of Ken Buck, who was once a Tea Party firebrand, cost Republicans a Senate seat back in 2010, back in the glory days of Christine O'Donnell, when being a witch. That was the same cycle where a nice center-right
like
Jane Norton.
Sharon Engel
in Nevada. Yeah. Jane Norton was going to run in my home state of Colorado. She was my former boss's lieutenant governor. She gets beaten in the primary by Ken Buck, who is too kooky for the Senate, loses, and then goes to the safe Congress seat. It's the degradation right before. The Ken Buck story is a nice.
That's the story synecdote, of the Republican, the modern. Synecdoche.
Synecdoche.
So there's another purge going on over at the RNC. A bloodbath, says a source close to the RNC. 60 people getting gone within hours of Lara Trump planting her flag. Kind of interesting. Tim, you will have more insight into this because you worked there. It seems as though most of the firings are in the data and comms shops, which to me suggests that what they want to do is take away important parts of the RNC so that the RNC cannot function independent of Trump 2024. So the RNC simply becomes an appendage of Trump 2024.
Subsuming this into Trump 2024, subsuming it into Trump for sure. Caputo was on this, wrote about this for Magaville. I think maybe his first or second thing for us. I think that's part of it. It's still, though, the RNC no job in politics is secure, right? It's a right. Transient business. But the RNC is a pretty stagnant building. A lot of lifers there, a lot of people that stay there for a while, get comfy, you know?
Yeah,
So people like getting canned, there are going to be some unhappy people. You're welcome. Our door's open here at the Bulwark if you want to share any complaints that you have, unhappy former RNC staffers. So I think that's interesting. And I do think this also speaks to money issues. It just does, right? Like, you wouldn't create this unnecessary drama. You know, you'd find work for them, and you know, you could move the pieces around if you had enough money. They don't have money, right? And like, Biden's already on the air right now, and they're not. And they are spending money on Trump's legal efforts, and
yeah,
now they've
got Larry
money
in
up there,
for that, right?
Yeah. So I think that multiple things can be true. Part of this is a reorg to give more power to Trump and to La Civita, really, I would say. Chris La Civita, the Trump strategist and the new one from this cycle, because he knows his way around. And I think that's part of it. But I also think it speaks to the money issues.
Here's the thing. And I don't think people are making, again, my complaints are all that people are not making a big enough deal out of all these insane things. It's not just about the firings, the RNC. And it is about the money for sure. It is insane that Laura Trump is taking over, like that he just installed a family member to run a political arm, right? Okay, that's crazy on its face. But this idea that they need to raise all this money to pay his legal bills, that feels like an offense message. That feels like something that all the Democrats, and I God knows we're going to do it, that feels like the kind of thing you go to voters. Like, do you want to pay off Trump's legal bills? And of course, there are going to be some that do. But like the fact, how does this work with the rest of the party, right? They got to fund down ballot races, Senate races. Like the RNC isn't there just there for the presidency. But they are going to hoover up all the resources to try to pay off his half a bill that he owns. And the other thing about how much money he owes is like, I was watching Line of Duty recently. Old show, British show, cop show. And one of the cops gets, he's in some debt and he doesn't disclose it to his higher ups and he gets in trouble for it. And the reason that you have to disclose your debts is because it makes you much more susceptible to bribery from bad guys and criminals. And so now we've got a president who was just storing our nuclear secrets at in his bathroom. And there's a new report out today that he was just showing around some submarine stuff to the Aussies. And like the idea that he is so in need of money and he's going to steal it from all these like old people and, you know, he's selling NFTs and his, and, you know, sneakers. But why aren't we explaining to people that he is running for president to stay out of jail and that he is taking all the money to pay his legal bills, and that he is much more susceptible to bribery and like the Chinese TikTok stuff. Like, I don't know. Did he flip on TikTok? Because like, we don't know, but he's really hard up for cash. And that makes him, it's not like he's the most moral guy or ethical guy. Aren't we worried about that? Shouldn't we be talking about that? I don't know. I feel like the narratives are all wrong.
Yeah. I just really quick. Also, the Aussies are our friends.
I know.
The thing that he was doing was talking about nuclear submarines with an Aussie. not like the Australian ambassador or something. It was like a rich Aussie who joined Mar-a-Lago. You know, it was just
Crikey.
Like some rich guy.
They were over a Foster's.
Crocodile Dundee. And he's like, hey, Dundee, do you want to see our map of where we're keeping our nuclear subs?
But like, I don't even care who it is. Like, I don't care if it's the ambassador or he's not the president. He's got nuclear secrets and he's just showing them around just for fun.
Fair point. All right. So let's talk a little TikTok then. I wrote a long.
You guys aren't even going to respond to whether or not you think he's open to being bribed?
No, it's all part of it. That's.
Okay. Sorry.
Work with the transition. I don't want to get into the, he might be dry. I just don't know. But yes, it's possible, right? He's got to pay these bonds too. He's got these $90 million bond in the New York case that he's got to pay in order to get the appeal. So yeah, I mean, sure. He's open to it. There are a lot of problems.
All right. So I wrote about TikTok today. I'm sure you both read it.
I read it.
Here's what has happened. So you have the Club for Growth, which has been opposed to Trump recently, right? They were heavy for DeSantis, I think. Yep. Trump was very angry with them. Yeah. Jeff Yass Queen. There, free headline for somebody who's writing about this. And he is a billionaire, runs a hedge fund, and he gives a lot of money to Club for Growth. And so he has brokered a peace between Trump and Club for Growth so that Club for Growth can open up its pockets and spend on Trump's behalf. Just as a total coincidence, Yass has about $20 billion tied up in ByteDance, which is the parent company of TikTok. And it's just a coincidence, Trump has now flipped on whether or not ByteDance should be forced to divest itself of TikTok, which does not at all sound like a guy who really is short of money for his campaign and so is looking for alternate funding sources to cover commercial buys and ad buys, right? I mean, that's basically what this is. And I'm interested in like both the political side of this from the Trump perspective, and then the political side of it from the congressional Republican perspective? Are they going to, do they feel like they can still move forward in trying to get TikTok cleaved off from ByteDance, or do they now have to rethink, like, is this like Ukraine where they now have to rethink that? Sarah, what are your thoughts on this?
I don't know, man. I had to launch Republican voters against Trump today, and I have missed like a full news cycle on like five things. So I know a little bit about the TikTok thing.
How did that launch go?
It's crushing. You may have seen the piece in the New York Times today. You may have seen the hundreds of Trump voters that we've had testimonials. You may have seen me on Morning Joe in the 7 o'clock hour this morning.
People submitting testimonials.
There's yeah, good man, ones. We're getting great. People are sending in their videos. We're getting emails being like, "This is me. Can I send you a video?"
RVAT.org.
RVAT.org. So for those of you listening, Republican voters against Trump, if you're listening, send us and tell us why you're not going to vote for Trump. But this time you do have to have voted for him once because, you know, there's a lot of us now because, as you noted earlier, it's been almost a decade. There are many of us who never voted for Trump, who've been never Trump from the jump. And as
another
a result,
T-shirt we're selling.
And as so a result,
the infomercial segment of the 3 hour Next Level program.
We are not the best messengers anymore. But many of these people who have voted for Trump, many of them as recently as 2020, who were out after the January 6th, the lies about the election, they tell those stories wonderfully, and they are never again Trump, Trump voters against Trump. And so anyway, I've been doing that, so I'd missed most of the TikTok. I have people in my office who are like, "Do you think they're gonna take TikTok away?" And I'm like, I hope so. It's Chinese spyware. But then I think about Tim, who spends hours scrolling through, I don't even know what, because I don't understand TikTok because I'm not on it. Twitter is my only
Sarah's
social
like,
media
do you
thing.
Use that on your telephone?
I talk. I have some thoughts, JVL, on this. Because the politics are interesting because of what Sarah just laid out, there is a legitimate point here about the political risk of going after TikTok because of its popularity among people under 35 in particular, and people like me who wish they're under 35. And so the fact that in their very first committee vote, this was unanimous. This is one of those things where like both parties, it's occasionally sometimes in Washington, I know people get mad at the elites, the leadership class, but occasionally to stave off the populist hordes, the right thing to do, we haven't seen a lot of this lately, but we've seen it in this case, is to everybody hold hands and say, okay, we're just going to jump together on this one because the Chinese, like this is pretty bad, right? Like, and I think as you astutely put out in your newsletter, the spyware element of it, isn't really great, but if you actually talk to tech experts, like the Chinese have bought they have all of our data already. I mean, they can get it from all of these data brokers who've got it from Google and Facebook and everything else. And it's like, there is a small risk in the spyware. There's a micro risk in certain cases that it could be abused. But I'm always like, what are the Chinese going to get from my spyware? Oh, they're going to find out that I like basketball and gay stuff and diva and drag
and
political stuff. Yeah. Like, ooh, you got me, China. You got me. I love basketball videos and gay videos. It's a weird combo, but you've nailed it.
When they find your Jokic / fiction,
yeah,
that might be a little.
So anyway, that's not the big problem. As you pointed out, the risk is the algorithm and the way it can be manipulated. And it's this black box, and it can distort. Maybe it just be used to divide Americans. Maybe it's just being used to push a specific candidate or just push the interests of a specific country or group in a foreign, foreign policy. I Scott Galloway was basically saying that he thinks that China was putting their thumb on the scale on, content related to Israel and Gaza.
They've done it in content related to Taiwan.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not living in a theoretical world.
Yes, we know that they've done it. So for that reason, and because it's kind of unknown what the Chinese interests might be, each party could decide that that at some level the Chinese might be against their interests, right? Both parties are just like, nope, okay, we got to get them to divest, force them to divest. We're all going to jump together. This is now where we get back to the Trump thing. Trump being a turd in the punch bowl on this makes it a lot harder for everybody to jump together. And it's easy to jump together in the committee when people aren't paying attention to this that closely. It's a lot different when you're on the House floor, when you have somebody demagoguing, when you then get to the Senate, you got to get over a filibuster. So I don't know. I think that Trump might have really put a monkey wrench in this thing that was moving pretty like kind of shockingly smoothly. Like I was shocked it was 50-0 or whatever it was to zero in committee. I would have thought that would have been.
Well, if he does this, shouldn't Democrats all across the country run on this?
Mm.
Shouldn't this be a make ban TikTok? No. Trump is a tool of the Chinese Communist Party, you know.
TikTok, I think, has probably within on K Street among think tanks has like a 290 approval rating among 30-year-olds and under in Atlanta. It probably has a 90 fave, 4 unfave rating. And so I just don't know that it's a political winner for Biden. I don't think it is. I think that's why the jumping together was necessary.
It's fallen world. Okay, Katie Britt. As Sarah and I were taping on Friday morning, Tim texted and said, "Have you guys talked about Katie Britt yet? If not, let me jump in." You had so many takes.
I wanted to come on the Secret Podcast to discuss Katie Britt. I was up until 2:30 in the morning searching Twitter and TikTok for Katie Britt content. I was insatiable. I was at the end of the internet. I wanted every Katie Britt meme in existence to be fed to me before I went to sleep on Thursday night.
So I teased out for Sarah a thing which I don't actually believe, but which I maybe like 5% believe, which is that Katie Britt is a smart woman. And she didn't get to be United States Senator by accident. And she has seen the floating of her name as a potential vice president and realized that this is a road to either jail or hanging. And so she's got to get out of this thing before it starts, which is why she did this insane, utterly insane response. And which is not, I just want to, this isn't
have,
the problem.
I have a question for you on this. Did I ask Bill this on yesterday's Daily Pod? Mm-hmm. It was the non-Trump category, because you can't count anything Trump does. Non-Trump category. It was the worst and weirdest speech in the television era.
Weirdest of the television era. Because
you have to take out press conferences and debates and stuff. A speech
where
you get to control everything. It was,
because
I think,
everything in that was a choice.
Vivek Ramaswamy once rapped "Lose Yourself," didn't he?
That was at a town hall. I know you can think of things. It's like the Mark Sanford press conference. Herman's cane going Becky Stan. I guess there was Rudy, but again, that's a press conference, like a speech where you're just a total set piece. You control everything, and you chose to do this. I think worst in the television era.
I can't think of anything else.
And again, the fact that she's weirder than like a Zell Miller, I just think this means that it was on purpose. Well, now we have Kristi Noem, who put out a tweet today that's basically an infomercial for a dentist office in Texas, not in her own home state, about how she got into a bike accident and all of her teeth were knocked out,
it includes a close-up, a super close-up of her teeth.
But it's also sideways. Her gums. It was like sideways.
It is, it's deeply, deeply uncomfortable. But also, I think, an attempt to make sure that she's out of the VP running too. Because I got to say, having seen this, I can tell you Donald Trump's reaction will be not classy.
Yeah, like, he hates it when people promote stupid products for money.
No, he hates it when they promote not classy products. That's what he hates.
The Trump steaks were classy,
right? The highest class steaks ever, the purest vodka ever, the greatest sneakers ever made.
I don't think it's the class or the infomercial. It's disgusting. Donald Trump does not like to shake people's hands. He's a germaphobe. We had like a 4K image of her gum line. I was like, what? I didn't you could see the little leftover popcorn kernels in her teeth. I'm like, why are you showing us this level of close up? She had a nice smile. Just show it. It would have been okay if it was just her smile. It would have been a little weird. but okay. But it was deeply uncomfortable, the whole video.
Do you know what I find depressing about all this? Is that as these women who are vying for VP, so Kristi Noem, Nancy Mace, Elise Stefanik, Katie Britt, it opens up, like, they have to behave in these shameless, like, and the thing was, like, Katie Britt, I gotta say, I've started to feel a little bad for Katie Britt. You know, I tweeted out yesterday because we had a focus group and it was two-time Trump voters, and they were like, that was so embarrassing. It was the weirdest thing I've ever seen. Like, two-time Trump voters was like, what was that? And so, like, it's universally panned. And having watched Katie Britt do other things, I know Katie Britt can be normal. And so, like, that wasn't actually her. She was coached in some way. She got used as a prop by the Tommy Tuberville's of the world. Tuberville,
who's like, she did what we asked her to do.
Yeah, she did what we asked her to do. Be a housewife. Make sure you forget she's a senator. Be a mom and a housewife and be insanely afraid. Be kind of sexy too
there, buttercup. Right? I mean, this is...
No.
You got to be angry, but also sexy. Jesus, remember, Jesus loves you, but also you're going to hell.
You know, right? have you ever been asked to go out and do something and they tell you it's for the team and you're on the team and you're trying to show you're good for the team and somebody sets you up to be humiliated? Like, you've been a spokesperson, Tim. It happens to us. Somebody's like, you got to go defend some weird thing.
Yeah, sure. I'm with
and,
you.
And so I feel like the pile on, like, whatever. She deserves it in the sense that it was the weirdest thing we've ever seen. But I'm starting to feel a little bit bad for her. And mainly I feel bad for the fact that all of these women who under different circumstances could have been serious, legitimate people and could have elevated, you know, blazed a path for more women in politics. And instead they are all going to be ritualistically humiliated through this. And we're going to spend all this time just like making fun of Kristi Noem's smile and her popcorn teeth and Katie Britt's like decolletage with the cross and the weird smile. Like, it's just all
so that he could just pick JD Vance anyway.
I think that's right.
I'm of two minds of this because the misogyny is absolutely right. I'm glad that you mentioned it. It is inarguable.
Wait, for which? For no, Katie just the Britt way that or Kristi yeah, Noem?
All. Just like the treatment, the way they feel like they have to act. Like, they're all on Ozempic. Let's just be honest. Like Elise Stefanik has had a huge makeover. Kristi Noem has a new face in addition to the teeth thing. Like, I mean, they all have felt this way. I think Katie Britt is probably just a natural beauty. But, like, they all feel like they have to do this for him, right? And that is misogynistic, and it's gross, and it speaks negatively about our culture. And I stand by it. And I think that that is right. And maybe we should be more careful about how we talk about it. That said, the for him part, though, makes me feel like, no, actually, we should make fun of them. And they should be humiliated. Because they're doing this for a fucking insane man that wants to be an autocrat. And, like, if they want to dance for Donald Trump, like, I'm sorry. Yeah, it says really bad things about our culture that half the country wants this, apparently. But I can't feel bad for somebody that wants to do a dance for Donald Trump.
Yeah, I guess I think that's right. And I also, like, I didn't feel bad for Katie, but I just started to feel sometimes I see myself in the pylon and I'm going to be done with the pylon, I guess. I don't know. Like, her career's torched. But then there's part of me that then I hear that part of me in my head too. That's like, they're doing this to themselves. Like, they're doing this on purpose. But I don't know. What? I'm not mad that they're ambitious. I'm mad that they're craven, but it's not. And we go after Tim Scott, I guess, but
Ted Cruz,
JD Vance. Here's the thing. I could all the way be too. I feel bad if Katie Britt's career was torched, but it isn't. She's like 38 years old or whatever, 42 years old. She's in an absolutely safe senatorial seat that she will own until the end of time, where she decides she wants to do something different with her life. Like, she won't pay any price within Republican politics for this. She just won't be Trump's VP this time around.
Yeah. I think I just hate it all. That's all. I just hate what Trump has done to everything around politics.
The Miss Universe of it all.
Yeah.
You better buckle up your chin strap. We're going to talk about Nancy Mace, who went on George Stephanopoulos' show on Sunday and was asked whether, you know, what how she reconciles her endorsement of Trump with his conviction for sexual assault. And Nancy Mace is not doing the five-dimensional chess to get herself kicked off of the VP shortlist. She is all in. And so her response was that she herself was a rape survivor. And she weirdly accused George Stephanopoulos. She's like, and, you know, that's a shame that you will never feel, which is a very odd formulation. So she refused to answer the question by saying that Stephanopoulos was trying to shame her because she's a rape victim. And then went and said that asking people about Trump's conviction for sexual assault itself is an attack on rape survivors because it makes it harder for victims of sexual assault to come forward, which is the most bonkers thing I've ever heard. And you want to talk about somebody who's lowering themselves. I don't even know where to go with that. Sarah, you look like I've broken you. Did I break you? I'm sorry.
I don't know why I'm doing this, but I'm not exactly going to defend Nancy Mace because she was being preposterous, but I just have to say, George Stephanopoulos also worked for a guy who was a sexual assaulter. And so I was just sort of like, okay, but let's all be a little more self-critical here. Let's see who's somebody should point out to Nancy Mace that it is very gross for her as a sexual assault survivor to work for somebody who has been accused. It's not just E. Jean Carroll. It's all of it. There were so many alleged sexual, although he is an adjudicated sexual assaulter in the E. Jean Carroll case. So, I think that was the right question, but it is.
The bimbo eruptions guy. It bothers you a little bit that he's coming from the bimbo eruptions.
That's
guy.
Right. Yeah. That's right. And this is what I mean. It's just.
So he goes, can I say this? I will say that in some ways she's getting what she wants, which sucks because the Trump bleat that was read during the Oscars was like a result of her whole shtick, right? Had she just gone on George Stephanopoulos, not make a big deal out of it, Trump would have never noticed that happened. But he did notice it because she made a whole big stink out of all this. And then when he is tweeting at Kimmel, that he then reads on stage, and he's like, the only person worse than Kimmel being there is George Ding-a-Dong or whatever thing is. And he's so short.
George Suckalopoulos.
Yeah, he's so short. And it's what is happening? All of this thing. So she got what she wants. She got Donald Trump's attention. I will say I was encouraged, though. I always don't know. I don't want people to feel like they can't speak to me in phone conversations or also use it on my podcast. So I'll just say somebody that is in my life that is not a George Stephanopoulos fan, like Sarah, and is was longtime Republican voter, is I turned on the thing on Sunday morning. And I'm watching this live. So not through the prism of Twitter or anybody's takes on it or short clips. And they're like, this woman is does not know Nancy Mace. And they're like, this poor woman is crazy. And it's like, I had just seen Katie Britt on Thursday night with the fake crying. And now it's Sunday morning. And it's like, where are they finding these people? And she's asked about Donald Trump's sexual assault. And then she starts yelling, shame, shame. What is happening? In some ways, I think the political gravity has applied a little bit to Britt and Mace, and so that's encouraging.
You know what's crazy? They were all normal once. Nancy Mace used to be on all the lists of moderate gettable Republicans. Yeah. Elise Stefanik, you wrote the whatever report with her, right?
Yeah. The autopsy.
The autopsy, which was all the normie establishment rhinos talking about how if they could just be more establishment normie rhino,
the
Republicans would win more elections. And so these were, and then now Nancy Mace's performative, wearing the A, Nancy Mace is clearly so craven and disturbed that this is how she's going to behave to try to get Donald Trump's attention. It is all so sad and pathetic. On the other hand, part of me went, dude, you worked for a sexual assault guy. Let's just,
Couldn't we get Robin Robertson to do this?
Exactly.
Is somebody else available?
I think Nancy Mace.
What do you think, JPL? You've been quiet. I know you get uncomfortable when Nancy Mace comes up. You get uncomfortable Mace and conflicted. So I'm interested in what you had to think about her
better job. He thinks she's so selling herself pretty. I think that she is attractive to Donald Trump.
And she is SWFing him, though. I think it's a little hard. I don't know. I hate having to be in Donald Trump's side, the single white female, like a stalker. She's like, it's like, I think Donald Trump might, like, eventually you would think that that'd be like, all right, I got it. Okay, you're trying as hard as you can possibly to be my VP. Or maybe
she broke up with her fiance so that she would be available, right? I mean, it's a little...
Okay, well, he doesn't get to be like, oh, okay, sweetheart. Like, I hope she boils a rabbit in his kitchen. you get that reference?
I do.
Tim has no idea.
Fatal Attraction. Glenn Close. It's in black and white. Yeah, it's and they you know, it wasn't a talkie yet. It wasn't a talkie. There was back when you had to have the piano players in the front of the theater and they would flash the dialogue cards on screen.
I hope when he doesn't choose them, they all go full insane on him.
It's gonna be J.D. Vance. Sorry. All right, guys, that was great. This is our first 90-minute show. Covered all the topics.
This was a great show.
Did I leave anything? Was it?
Was it 90 minutes?
I think that it was a good length.
It felt like 2 hours.
I think it was a really good length.
Is hanging out with us hard, JVL?
I just think
is it taxing?
No, I love hanging out with you guys so long as there's a mediated layer of technology.
Here's what's really happening.
Us.
Can I tell you what's really happening?
Yeah.
JVL, it's 53 minutes. Thank you, Session. A short show, frankly.
Yeah.
And we should be going longer. JVL will not be happy. He refuses to be happy. And so it's kind of in a perverse way when, like, the New York Times poll is out there and Donald and Joe Biden's losing by 5 and, you know, things are and it's dark outside. That's when JVL's like kind of gets his dander up and that's like where he shines. And right now Joe Biden's had a good 5 days. We've had daylight savings time. I will not apologize to you standard time people in the comments. I will not apologize. We have daylight savings time. He's getting his vitamin D. Joe Biden said some good speeches. Bad things have befallen Katie Britt and Nancy Mace and JVL, and the bulwark is thriving.
My subtweeting exchange with Ezra Klein in the page of The Atlantic over whether or not Joe Biden's the best guy.
He defeated Ezra Klein in a battle that only JVL knew about, that Ezra Klein didn't know he was participating in. And so he cannot be happy because so many good things have happened the last 5 days. And so he has to complain about our company.
Guys, if you want to do something to cheer JVL up, go become a Bulwark subscriber. We are growing this great community that has been on fire, but we are still, we need you. You are getting all this free content, this amazing show you just got today with all of our takes. So go become a Bulwark subscriber, sign up for Bulwark Plus, and get more. Yeah.
All right, guys. See you next week.
Bye.
Great show.